Hello, this is Richard Outram, and welcome to the Prepare for Growth podcast series, bite-sized wisdom for leadership and personal development. So thank you for taking time out to join me. I'm so grateful for this unique opportunity.
Okay, and in this week's podcast, I'm thrilled to introduce Gary M. Douglas, a renowned speaker, best-selling author, and founder of Access Consciousness. He's an international authority on consciousness and well-being, who delivers personal development seminars and organizational well-being programs around the world. Gary is a best-selling author of multiple books and a vocal advocate for benevolent capitalism and conscious leadership. This advocacy is echoed in all of his business ventures, including his latest sustainable eco-resort, El Lugar, which is pioneering a new standard for ecologically conscious building practices. And Gary's wisdom bite for this episode is why allowance is the greatest gift you can give anyone. Gary, I am so thrilled to have you on the show. This is fabulous. I feel as though I'm part of the Access Consciousness family, as I mentioned before.
You are becoming it. It's true.
I've had four of your esteemed colleagues on the show as well. So it's a pleasure.
They all told me you were great. So I said, okay, I would do it.
Oh, wonderful. Well, that's quite an endorsement. I appreciate that. Thank you. And did you want to add anything to the introduction, Gary? Did I get it all?
Yeah, almost everything. Only I don't consider myself the founder of Access. I consider myself the perpetrator of Access.
Wow. Oh, that's an important distinction. I like that.
I like it too.
All right. Okay. So in the first segment, what have you learned? All right. So can you share a bit about your journey and how you came to perpetrate Access Consciousness?
Well, it's like the thing is that what I had been doing is I've been channeling for a number of years. And I just, you know, it's like, and I quote unquote lost my job. And so I went, okay, so what am I going to do? And what do I want to do? And what's really important to me? So I sat down and wrote a list. And I went, okay, so number one, I want to do something that's fun. I want to do something that's never boring because I get bored really easily. And I want to have something that I can travel 1 to 2 weeks out of every month. And I want to earn at least $100,000 a year because I needed that to take care of my family. I had four kids.
Yeah.
So, so I asked for those things. And a week later, this guy called me from New York and he says, I want you to come to New York and do some channeling for me. And I said, okay, so what do you mean? He said, well, I want you to channel for my massage therapist. Okay, do I have to take off my clothes? Do I have to open my eyes? Do I have to touch your body? No. Okay, fine, I'll come. So I went there and I did this channeling, and what came from that was the original elements of Access, which is called the bars.
Yep.
And it's like, and from that, that was the beginning. I went there, I talked about this stuff. And when we left, the guy said, well, that was really interesting. That was really fun. I said, yeah, I'm sure it was. I didn't think a thing about it. And all of a sudden, I felt like I'd been hit between the ears with a 2x4. This is a class, you dummy. Okay, I got it. That hurt. Don't do that again, please. I was like, and he hit me again. And he goes, that is a class, you know. Okay, I'll do it as soon as I get home. I swear to God, just don't do that again. It hurts. And so I got home and I called up three friends and I said, I'm giving a class on what? Consciousness? Okay. And how much does it cost? $75? How long is it? Three nights? And so I did it in three nights and I did it for $75. I did it with my three friends. And at the end of it, I said, okay, so what was this for you? To one of the friends, he says, well, it seems like what you do from this is you access this place of peace. You access this thing of, you access this thing of, you access. I said, okay, thank you. I got the name now, Access.
Yeah.
And it was about consciousness. And so I started, that's where I started from. And I have, you know, it's like I thought I was going to be able to channel it all. So I never had to open my eyes and never had to look at anybody. I never had to talk to anybody. I just could let him do it. And one day, you know, like in the middle of a class, he goes, "Okay, you're on now." I said, "No, don't leave me. Help, help." Felt like a peacock, you know. I was yelling help all the time. So it's like, it's like literally I started doing it from there. And it's like he says, "You're on your own, get to work." And I got to work and I started doing this stuff. And I spent years developing the techniques and stuff. But they have developed over time. And it's gotten to be a really great place where things can happen very quickly and easily for people. And it's like, it gave me a definition of consciousness, which I find very helpful personally. Consciousness includes everything and judges nothing.
Yeah.
And it's like most things judge as to whether it's right or wrong or good or bad or the best thing or the worst thing or whatever. I don't judge. And I don't do it when I talk to people. I don't do it in life. I don't do it when I'm doing my work. So there. And by word of mouth, this has spread to 179 different countries.
Wow. Wow.
How the hell did that happen? I didn't even advertise it.
Wow.
Just one friend told another who told another who told another who told another. Word of mouth. And it's just the most wonderful way to grow anything.
100%. And the passion for this is just unbelievable. As I said, I've had four of your colleagues on this show, and they are just so passionate about how this changes lives and elevates humanity. Gary, so
yes, and
it's a fabulous.
That's the purpose. It's like to elevate humanity. I want the world to be a better place. When I leave, it's like, you know, the world has done so much damage to our earth and has done, you know, so many wonderful wars and things to kill people and destroy people. And for me, what's most important is to see that there's a different possibility here.
Yeah.
What could we create if we didn't function from judgment? And that's what I stress all the time. And also one of the things is, if you learn to question instead of conclude, all things become possible. And I want to live in a world of possibility, because I have grandchildren and some of them are the cutest little guys I've ever seen in my life. And I got two grandsons that are the smartest little creeps in the whole world. And they are so self-assured because their mother is such a wonderful person that it's like I watch her with those kids and I went, wow, if every kid could be raised like this, instead of with the judgment and the anger and the upset and the intrigue and the trauma and drama. And it's like, if you didn't live your life as a telenovela, what would you live it as?
Yeah, yeah. You know, Gary, you hit such a good point here. So, you know, judgment rather than learning. You know, there's different ways of slicing that one. You know, there's a growth mindset, fixed mindset, but you lay it in such a simple way, learning rather than judging. And at the moment,
yes,
when you're about to judge, why not seek to learn? Why not ask questions and open up the possibilities?
Asking a question. You know, it's like one of the questions I always ask people to do is like, you know, it's like you know, if you're like most people, you go, "What's wrong with me that I can't make this work?"
Yep.
You know? And I go, okay, when you have that point of view, instead ask what's right about this. I'm not getting.
Yes.
So you start to see what's right about it and what's right about me, I'm not getting. So you begin to realize you're not wrong and you're, you know, you may have something right there. And what if you were willing to live from that instead of from the judgment of you?
And the possibilities that open up, Gary,
yes,
to your point.
Yes, exactly.
Wow, wonderful.
Well, the possibilities are the reason that we have benevolent capitalism. Because benevolent capitalism is about growing the cattle for all people, not just for one person. You know, it's like we have become capital fascists more than anything, because it's about the rich people get all of it. And it's like that's, you know, that's really closer to communism. The rich people get all the rich stuff and the poor people get to share their poverty. How fun. Not. You know,
right.
What if we all shared in the wealth of possibilities? And I think that we all can and do. And it's like we have 260 people around the world that work for us. We have no offices. Well, we have official offices for tax purposes.
Wow.
But that's for tax purposes. You know, it's like, how do you have to live in this reality according to how this reality is lived? Tax purposes, among other things. So it's like, I'm always looking for what else is possible. What else is possible there I haven't considered?
Absolutely. And I tell you, I want to really go deep on this point about, you know, how you shift mindsets from judgment to learning and possibilities. I want to come back to that, Gary, but I do want to kick it off a little bit here. Is what inspired you to write your new book, The Gift of Allowance?
Well, it actually started out years ago. It's like, I discovered that if you can be an allowance, everybody thinks you love them and everybody loves you. If you're in judgment, people go, where's he going to judge me? And who is he judging now? Instead of what's possible here. And they start to function from a possibility when you are willing to be an allowance of them. One of the things we teach to the facilitators who do access is to be an allowance. Never be in judgment of somebody. If you're in judgment of them, go in the bathroom and shoot yourself until you're over your judgment. And, you know, just get over the judgment and be an allowance. And if you can be an allowance of people, they will grow and they will become greater and they will become better and they will become everything they can be. And I think that's more important than anything else.
And a bit more specific in what you mean by allowance.
Allowance is, it's an interesting point of view. It's neither, it's, you don't align and agree with the point of view, nor do you resist and react to the point of view. No alignment, agreement, no resistant reaction, just interesting point of view. And it's an interesting point of view. And when you come from an interesting point of view, I discovered that I could do that years ago, because what I used to do is I used to invite ladies to my house. And I would cook them a really nice dinner and serve them a really great bottle of wine and play really nice music and ask them questions about themselves all night long and tell them nothing about me. If at the end of the evening they said, you're the most interesting man I've ever met, I knew I was going to get laid. Practical versions of allowance. I know you're not supposed to tell stories like that about yourself, but I do.
That is awesome. Okay, so what does allowance mean in the context of personal growth and possibly leadership? Well,
if you can see what something is, you know, so my point of view is there's four basic questions. What is this? What do I do with it? Can I change it? And if so, how do I change it? And it's like, and if you function from those basic questions, if you're asking, what is this? You're not going to be judging it. We try to judge it. Oh, that's a red flower. That's a white flower. Which is better, the red or the white? Yes. Both of them are equally good. They're just different. And if you start to look at everything from the point of view of it's equally good and it's equally bad, but what's the choice here? What can I change? What do I want to change? You know, it's like, what was it that you know, in Alice in Wonderland, the queen wanted all the roses painted red. So she had people taking the white roses and painting them red. And it's like, what is this? It's a white rose, then paint it red. It's like, this is allowance and such, because it's not that you're a doormat about it. You determined to do or be something to change it. And you got to be willing to change things if you're going to have success. My youngest son, was really fond of alcohol. So was my eldest son. Oh, yeah, we have a few, bit of that in our family. So it's like they would, you know, like my son would say, you know, it's like I said, look, don't ask me to go out to dinner with you. You're very embarrassing to be with. You hit on these girls and you say the most crude and awful thing. Okay, nice. So what? You know, why would you say that to anyone? You know, it's like, please, it's embarrassing. Stop it. He says, well, where's your allowance, Dad? I said, it is allowance. I don't call the cops when you're driving with your young daughter in your truck drunk. That's allowance, my son. I know you're not going to get in an accident. So I will let you do it, but I'm not fond of it, nor do I think it's appropriate. You need to change your point of view, because I ain't going to change mine.
Yeah. So if you go to a deeper level, Gary, is allowance, is it kind of recognizing that we have our own realities and we have our own separate realities, right? Which
One of the things I did years ago is I read a series of books called The Alexandrian Quartet, which is Clio, Balthazar, Montolive, and Clio, Mount Olive, Balthazar, and Justine. Okay. And it's written about Alexandria in the 1920s. And it's about five people that experience the same set of circumstances, but how each one of them sees it different.
Yep.
I think it's the most brilliant set of books I've ever read, ever. And it's like, and I know it's brilliant because I had to look up words. And I usually have such a good vocabulary. I don't have to look up a word when I read. But I had to look up lots of words in this set of books. And it was interesting to see that, you know, the same set of events, people have a different relationship to it. They see it from their own point of view. And I began to realize that that's the way people view everything in life, from their own point of view that has nothing to do with anybody else's point of view.
Yep.
And once I got that, I understood allowance in a whole different way.
And that's brilliant. I love that, Gary. And when you mentioned about possibly, you know, I wouldn't say controlling the outcome once you've decided.
Well, it wouldn't be controlling the outcome because you can't control an outcome.
You can't control
unless
it.
You take a fixed point of view. And if you have a fixed point of view, then nothing can change.
That's exactly, that's where I was headed. It is, you can't control it. And that's part of what you're saying in terms of allowance, which is, you know, come out of resistance mode, all right? Because it's a flow of life.
Yes, you know, it's like, do the birds judge whether it's a good enough day to sing or do they just get up and sing?
Absolutely. Well said.
You know, it's like, do the horses decide what they're going to eat or do they just eat?
Yeah.
They eat, you know, and they will choose one thing and not another because they like the taste of that better. You know, if we were an allowance of everything, if you ate and drank according to what your body liked instead of forcing it to eat and drink the things you're supposed to have it eat and drink because that's quote unquote better for it, would you have a different result?
Yeah, exactly. So Gary, in the heat of the moment, all right, in the heat of the moment, you know, we all as humans, we've got our flaws, we're gonna judge. In the heat of the moment, from a practical standpoint, how do I learn to learn? There's a heat of the moment, you know, Gary and I are talking. You know, I may be judging, whatever, but I've got to train myself. I got to do something to get into the mindset of learning.
Well, that's where you learn this one process I teach, which is interesting point of view.
Got it. Okay.
If it's just an interesting point of view, it's neither right nor wrong, nor good nor bad. It's just an interesting point of view. Then you can do whatever you choose with it. What is this? It's a judgment. What do I do with it? I can either accept it and get washed away in the tide, or I can reject it and get washed away in the tide, or I can be an allowance of it. And if I'm an allowance of it, then I have a different choice. And what can I choose? And can I change this? The greatest thing was getting to that point of recognizing the, can I change this thing? Because for me, it's like, I always wanted to make things better. I was a romantic of magnitude. It was gross. You know, I married two women who didn't know they could be loved. And I decided that if I loved them enough, they would be happy. Neither one of them ever got happy. You know, because you couldn't love them enough because they couldn't love themselves.
Right.
They weren't happy with themselves. They judged themselves. And it's like, if they hadn't judged themselves, they'd have had a chance for something greater. The funny part about it is, both of them have offended their children to the point where their children don't talk to them anymore. You know, because they were in judgment of their children, not an allowance of their children. I'm an allowance of the children. You know, it's like, I can look at my son and I go, okay, you're a dickhead. You know, I like you. You're a cute dickhead. You make good kids. But man, are you just a dickhead. You know, and it's like, and recognizing that you're, you know, that you're, children are Richard Craniums instead of the, you know, Jesus Christ you thought they were going to be, makes life a lot easier.
Okay. No, beautifully said. So let's go down the path of leadership now. So can you share some key concepts or practice from the book that leaders can apply in their daily lives? I know you've touched on some of them just now.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that if you're willing to be a leader, you never ask people to follow you. You never demand of them that they do what you want. You ask them a question and see if they'll go with you. Invite them to the game of life. Don't try to control the game of life. If you try to control the game of life, you're going to lose. You have to lose. Because the moment you try to control somebody is when they put up their dukes and start to fight. You know, and that's the one thing I learned. They will fight anybody if they try to make them go where they don't want to go. So I don't try to make them go where I don't want them to go. I just tell them what's not okay for me.
You got it. Okay. All right. And in the journey of personal and spiritual growth, Gary, challenges are going to be inevitable. How does the concept of allowance play a role in overcoming obstacles and adversity?
Well, when you ask, what is this? And you don't have a judgment about it, but you have a recognition of it. You know, it's like if it's a sunny day, do you go, oh, it's hideous today? If it's cloudy, do you go, it's hideous today? I go, wow, it's cloudy today. How cool. Wow, it's sunny today. How beautiful. You know, it's like I look at what is, and then I go, can I change this? Do I want to change it? What do I really want to create? And being an allowance is an interesting place because, like, one of the things I had seen, I met many Sikhs, you know, the guys that wear turbans.
Yes.
And so it's like I said, I hate turbans. I went, why do I hate turbans? Where did that come from? And then I remembered when I was a little kid, my mom talking about hating turbans because at that time, women would put curlers in their head and then put a turban on it to hide them. And she thought that was disgusting. You should never go out of the house with your curlers on. You know, you're supposed to finish your hair and be perfectly coiffed when you leave the house. And that was my mother's point of view. And it's like, I went, oh, I don't hate turbans. It was my mother who hated turbans. Oh, interesting point of view. Shortly thereafter, I saw a guy watching me on the video of our class. And he was a Sikh and he was wearing his turban. I went, God, I love that man. He's so cool. And I met him and he is just one of the coolest people I ever met. He and his wife are from India. They were supposed to bury other people. And they met each other and said, no, we're not going to follow our family's routine. We're going to do what we want. And they got together and married. And they've been married over 50 years. And they are the cutest, sweetest couple I've ever met in my life. And she was an allowance of him being the major that he was in the army. And he was an allowance of her being the, you know, the beautiful woman who would be there to take care of him when he got home. And I just was amazed. And his wife said to me at one point, she said, oh my God, I'm so glad you came along, Gary. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, it's like I thought we were going to retire and live on the post and go to the place where all the retired army people live, and we would be playing mahjong or something every week. And it's like, I would have been so bored. I would have hated that. I said, yeah, I understand that. I wouldn't like that either. And it's like, you got to have a different place to function from. And so they have been traveling around the world doing classes, and it's been great. And they're just two of the sweetest, most wonderful people I have ever met in my life. And I feel that's pretty much what I found with all of these people. Underneath their judgments is this sweet, kind, lovely person. And when they achieve that, they are such a gift in your life. And it's like, I'm 82 this year. And it's like, and I'm still working. And I work 10 to 12 hours most days. And everybody says, how come you're working? I said, because I can and because I like to. It's fun to do my work because I see people change and become more of who they are. And that's the only thing that's of value to me.
Do you believe, Gary, that, you know, there's an iceberg and there's below the iceberg at the sea level. Do you believe that, you know, iceberg is, you know, judgment, ego, and so forth, but below the sea level, everyone is pure and everyone has a pure spirit.
I don't think they are pure and have pure spirits. Don't think that, because that's judgment.
Got it.
If you think they have poor and they're, you know, they're poor spirits or they're nice people. You know, it's like, I think some people are just friggin' evil. Okay. They just are. Why? Because they chose that. Why did they choose it? It isn't a question. It's an assumption that they chose it for a reason, not they chose it because they could. And you got to have that place where you see that people choose things. No matter how stupid it is, they'll choose it anyway.
Got it. Understood. All right. Okay. That was it. That's a great answer. I've not heard that one before. So thank you for that. I've learned something today. So look, in this day and age, let's talk about allowance, how it applies to parents, teachers, and even the world of social media. There's technological influences and maybe an unrealistic bar, which is created by the reality of media. How does allowance play into that?
I allow it to be there, but I don't use it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe in social media because, see, it's like I grew up in an era when you didn't have social media, you didn't have cell phones, you didn't have all this electronics judging your life and functioning your life. I mean, I remember when TV started.
Yeah.
You know, it was a little screen this big with a giant magnifier in front of it so you could see it across the room. And it's like, you know, it's like, and you'd pull it further away so that it looked, but it was distorted, but it was, you could see it. And it's like, I remember those days. Most people don't, but it's a sign of how old I am. And that's the thing that's so interesting to me is like, I see these people functioning from these things as though it's truth. And I always have the idea. It's like, I learned long ago. It's like, if I have a point of view about something, is it true or is it a lie I bought? So I always ask truth before everything, because the law of the universe is that if you ask truth before a question, the person has to tell you the truth. They can't lie to you. Or if they do lie to you, you and everybody around you knows it's a lie.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a real nice law of the universe. And if the law of the universe is that, why? Because the law of the universe is you shouldn't be a liar. You shouldn't be a con man. You shouldn't be a bad person. You should be somebody who's looking to create and generate more. And the one thing about animals is like they, you know, they help the herd. They don't help themselves. It's not just about them. It's about everybody else. And that's the reason they have the hierarchies they do. You know, the alpha mare, the alpha dog, the stallion, the, you know, the wolf. And it's like, I mean, one of the things I learned about is that wolves only eat diseased animals. I didn't know that. When, you know, it's like I was 50 some odd years old when I found out that. I went, wow, they choose the diseased animal because they see a different energy in their vibration. And so that's the one they attack. And that's to make the herd strong so that there's more in the future for them to eat and more of the animals that are what they're eating. More of them being in the world to create a possibility. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, if we all functioned from that kind of place, it'd be a different world. If we looked at the vibration of people and we could actually see the disease, it would be a different world. And there's all kinds of mental disease, physical disease, emotional disease. And, you know, all of those things exist. But if that was who we killed, it's like we'd have a much better place. See, I remember the good old days, lifetimes ago, when I could chop heads off. God, that was fun. Yeah, I remember chopping heads, and I thought, oh, God, I wish I could do that now, but I couldn't get away with it. I'd go to jail. So I don't do it.
So that you led into a really good point here, because I wanted to talk about how the principle of allowance enhances our connections with others. So you talked about the couple from India. That was a beautiful story. And you even talked about the herd mentality with animals. So how does allowance enhance connections with others?
Well, it's like if you are an allowance, I mean, like I have friends who, you know, back Trump. Okay. And I don't particularly agree with his mentality or his point of view. In fact, I hate it. No, I shouldn't say that. Oh, well, I did. Too bad. Okay. And, you know, it's like, for me, it's like, I see that they think it's good. And I, you know, and I'll let them tell me why they think he's better than everybody else. It doesn't make me agree with them. It makes me realize how stupid they are. No. And you have to be an allowance of stupidity too. So I'm sorry. That was bad, wasn't it? Oh, well. I like to have fun with things. I think if you have fun with things and if you look and you see the humor in things, life is so much easier.
I'm a big believer in that, Gary. I've lived my life. I come from a family that laughs way too much, usually at each other. We're born and raised in England. And I believe in every situation, there's humor, unless someone's about to die. But other than that, whether it's a business situation or personal.
Well, sometimes when they're about to die, there's humor too. You know, it's like my ex-wife, she went to see her father who was dying. And she thought this was going to be one of those cathartic moments when he said, "I've always loved you." And he looked at her and he opened his eyes from a coma and he says, "You've always been damn strange," and died.
his final words.
Or his final words to you, "You've always been damn strange." And he died. And I just think that's hysterically funny. I, of course, laughed. But then my mother came, you know, was coming back and asked to stop and see my sister. She was coming back from vacation. She asked, you know, it's like, and so the two friends that she had been with and my mother got out of the car and my sister said, "Well, where's Jim?" My stepdad. He said, "Oh, he's in the trunk." "What do you mean he's in the trunk?" "Well, he died while we were gone, so I cremated him. I put him in the trunk." Now, my mother didn't call and tell my sister over the phone that the man had died. He told her then. And it's like, to me, it was like watching National Lampoon's, you know, Vacation when the grandmother dies and they strap her on the roof in a rocking chair. And I just fucking roared. I roared. I was just laughing hysterically. I said, "That's my mom. She was that kind of person. She'd go to the hospital to have an eye operation. And then call my sister, "Could you come and get me, honey? I just had an eye operation." She would not tell you before she went into the hospital. She'd tell you when she was ready to get out.
Yeah. I love it. Like, I love
my
it.
My mom.
Yeah. I love it. All right. For someone new to the ideas presented in Allowance, what are some practical steps they can take to incorporate these principles in their daily routines?
Well, with me, like when I decided I hated turbans, okay?
Yep.
It's like I didn't know what hating a turban was until I wore one. I had a event in Jaipur, and I went there, and it's like, and they wanted me to come in on an elephant and be a guru. Mm-hmm. And I went, okay, fine, I would do that. So I got a special, you know, outfit made, got a turban. They put it on my head and it was so damn tight. I thought I was going to die from the brain pressure. And it's like, and I had to get on this elephant and ride in to the event. And it's like, I thought it was silly, but I did it. And I went, wow, I do hate turbans. I don't want to wear one ever again. And I went, oh, if I hate turbans, how many lifetimes have I worn a turban? Oops. Can't judge anything you haven't been or done.
100%. I agree.
Yeah. You know, well, to judge it, you have to have been there and done it.
Your story reminds me when I got married. So I got married with a traditional Indian wedding. It wasn't, it was in London, of course. So I couldn't get the elephant, but it was a Ford
Cortina.
That's
sad.
It was a Ford Cortina. I drove up in a Ford Cortina with my turban on. That was the next best thing we could do, Gary. So there you go.
I love it. A Ford Cortina or an elephant? What's the difference? That's great. I love it.
All right. Okay. So how do you envision the principles of allowance on a larger scale, both individually and globally?
Well, I mean, if we had allowance, then we wouldn't have a lot of the wars we have. Okay. The thing I've learned about allowance is when you have allowance, you don't have to go to war to do something. You can find a way around something. When there's allowance, there doesn't have to be wars. When there's allowance, there doesn't have to be conflict. I was doing a podcast on Voice America years ago. And I got together with a bunch of people that were in one of my classes and talked to them about, you know, allowance and what this had gotten for them. And I had somebody there who was Hindi. I had somebody who was Muslim. I had somebody who was Danish and English, and I had somebody who was Spanish and English, and I had somebody who was a Russian Jew American. And it's like, and all these different people said, one thing I've learned is I can be an allowance of anyone, and I can see what their point of view is, but I don't have to buy it. Because most people, they try to convince you of taking their point of view so that you like each other. And you don't have to like somebody, but you can be an allowance of them, and you can see who they are, and you can admire who they are for their strong points and their good points, and not have to judge their bad points.
That is the crux of the conversation, Gary. Thank you. Yeah. That was quite a crescendo. That is exactly the key point. So thank you for that. That was beautifully said. Thank you. Awesome. Okay. Are there any initiatives or projects within Access Consciousness that you're particularly excited about in terms of creating positive change in the world?
Everything. But, you know, one of the things we're doing is we have been doing this for 28 years, okay? And we've done classes for 28 years. And I've never shared or put out there much of anything that's in a class. And so we are doing an app that's called Access Me. And it's like, and you can go on that, and for $250 a month, you can get access to all the classes we've had in the last 28 years.
Wow.
And it's all information that works. I mean, we have one book called How to Become Money, which I wrote in 1986, and it's still applicable today. And I have people who do, and I let the people who are access facilitators do classes on that, and they do it online, and they have classes, and they do this stuff, and they answer the questions, and they do all the different elements of working this workbook, and they just love it. And it's like, it still applies, it still works, and every element of it is valuable. And it's, you know, and it truly is about getting to the point about recognizing where you're functioning from and not having a judgment of it, but realizing what kind of change. And it's like, you've had Simone on, and I don't know whether Simone told you, but when she first came to Access, she was $186,000 in debt.
Yes, she said that. Yeah, I remember.
2 years later, she was debt free.
Yeah, that was a great story.
Just by following the elements of that. And I think it's just amazing when you do this. And I do it. I follow this. You know, it's like, put 10% away and never spend it. I put 10% away and I never spend it.
Yeah.
You know, do I have it? And well, I do spend it, but I spend it on things that are worth more money so that I can add them to my wealth seeking capacities, because I'm avaricious. I love beautiful things, and I love money, and I love living well. So I'm going to have those things one way or another. So it's like, I have spent my 10%, but only on things that were worth at least 50% more than what I paid for them. And I have beautiful things, and I have amazing things, and I have, my life is filled with things of beauty and things of peace and elegance. And that to me is the gift of life.
Nothing wrong with that, Gary. I can see you're sitting on a throne right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome, Gary. So are there any specific tools or exercises from the book that leaders, let's talk about leaders, that leaders can use to improve their relationships, both personally and professionally?
Well, it's like, when you're an allowance of the people that work for you, like, one of the things I tell people is, I did not hire you for you to give me choices. I can make choices myself, and I can figure out what my choices are. I don't want you to give me a list of choices. I want you to tell me what you think is the choice that will create the most in the world.
Wow.
And the most change. Those are the things I'm interested in. So I hire people for their awareness, not for their ability to figure things out.
That's really well said, Gary. No, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, look, it's a struggle because, and I've had a 4-decade professional and leadership career as well. And you constantly have to strive to, people across your organization. You can come up with your analysis and all that kind of good stuff, whether it's qualitative or quantitative, but come up with a recommendation. You can give some options, but come up with your recommendations and why, right? Then I'll have at least near complete information as to what you're thinking, and I can make a decision, or we
Yes,
collectively can make
exactly.
a decision.
Yeah, but that's the way it should be, and most people don't function that way.
Oh,
You don't know that you're different, but you are different.
yeah, absolutely, absolutely. All right, the next round, Gary, what would you change in any area of life, not just business?
I don't know. I'd change anything. I mean, one of the things when I was 64, I went to a doctor and he said, "Well, your grandmother died of heart failure and your father heart died of heart failure. You should be taking aspirin every day." And I said, "Why?" "Well, you want to live longer, don't you?" And I said, "I don't care. I've had a great fucking life so far, and I enjoy every day of my life. And my life is a gift to have. When I wake up in the morning, it's like, yay, I'm not dead, and I live from every moment. I live in every moment and I enjoy every moment and I don't suffer and I don't have major body issues and stuff. There's lots of people who have lots of, they get older and they start to fall apart. I'm not falling apart, I'm falling together. It's like, forget it. I want to live. To live is an action. To have a life is to have completed everything. I have not completed everything I want to complete. I'll probably die the day I realize I know everything.
Oh, powerful. That's well said. Look, I love your zest for life, Gary. Love it. Love it. Your feet touch the ground every morning and you're grateful for that. And there's so many possibilities. That's your own way
Yes.
of allowance.
It's like
100%.
I love having possibility. Possibility is
Yep.
everything. We just bought the house next door to us because it had the people over there had an indoor swimming pool that they were air conditioning with a commercial size air conditioner for a giant commercial building. So noisy that our backyard was never quiet. And we live in a really quiet area of town where it should be quiet. But they had this air conditioner. It was so noisy. It was so awful. And it roared all the time. It sounded like a small jet engine going constantly. So it's like we bought the house next door with the idea of taking that out. So we did. We took it out and we got rid of it. It's like the first day that we owned the house, turned it off, quiet in our backyard. It is so nice. And it's like if we turned around and sold it tomorrow for $500,000 less than we paid for it, we'd still be ahead
Yeah.
because the quiet is so valuable. So we've taken it out. We've taken out all the elements that allow it to be. We've taken out all the air conditioning units for the indoor pool. Now we live in Texas, Houston, Texas. How much cold weather does it get? About a week a year of cold weather. The rest of the time, it's usually hotter than hell, and you really want to go in a swimming pool to cool off. Well, the man's wife was Irish, and she thought that, she was so subject to the sun that she couldn't go out in the sun. So she created an indoor pool so she would never have to go out in the day. Personally, I think she was a vampire, but that's my point of view. Because their house was dark and heavy, and it's like they had a bedroom that looked like Hugh Hefner's bedroom in LA, and it's like, and it was just not nice, I didn't think. And the indoor had walls of brick, as well as the outdoors had walls of brick. So it was brick, it was a brick shit house. And it was just, it was just amazing. It was so dense and so heavy and so depressing. And so I've already changed some things and I painted some walls white and I've, and I'm redoing all of the walls that have brick on them so that they look like plaster. So it's like it will be very nice when it's done. And then we'll sell it. And if we sell it for more money, it's fine. If we sell it for less money, I'm fine too. Because, man, just having that quiet backyard is so wonderful. And the first night we had it turned on, I slept for the first time in the 14 years we've been here.
Oh.
All night long, quietly.
Priceless.
Great. Yeah.
Priceless.
Priceless. Exactly.
What are you grateful for in any area of life, not just business?
I'm grateful for every day in my life, because every day I can help someone else see a different point of view and see a different possibility and find how to function so that they are creative to a degree they've never been. And I get people out of their judgment of themselves. When people judge themselves, to me, it's really sad, because it's like, you know, you cannot be as bad as you think you are, you know. It's like one of the things I said to Simone the first time I did a class. I said, "You're not nearly as fucked up as you think you are." She went, "What?" And she said, "Oh, I love this man. He swears and he's irreverent. Yes, I am. And I do not think you are as fucked up as you think you are. And if you started to function from not being as fucked up as I, you know, if I'm not as fucked up as I think I am, and if I'm not as fucked up as my mother thinks I am, and I'm not as fucked up as my father thinks I am, then what am I?" Yeah, and you can be in question of yourself and you can choose something different.
Absolutely. All right, the quick round. Looking back at your personal professional journey, what advice would you give to your younger self?
The advice I give myself now. Find allowance, find what's true for you, and don't change your point of view for anybody else's to make them happy. You cannot make other people happy. That's one of the things I discovered in my marriages. Neither of my wives ever got happier, no matter how much I loved them. They were judgmental and angry women their whole lives. But I learned that I tend to like judgmental and angry women, and I find them very attractive. So I now do not do relationships because I'm shit at them.
What legacy do you hope to leave through your work and teachings?
Well, it's like we have a place called El Lugar, which is a resort that we're building down in Costa Rica. And one of the things that went there, and I said, okay, well, I want to make this look like something that was built in the colonial days. And I want it to be something that does not create an impact on the earth in a negative way. And I want it to look like it's been here 100 years and last 100 years. And the architect said, "We don't do that here in Costa Rica. Everything is modern." I said, "Bye." Yeah. And I found one guy who was willing to build a colonial and do all that. And he brought in his engineer and he said, "Well, we're going to have to take off the first 3 meters of topsoil here to get down to ground bedrock so we can build foundations." I said, "Well, what kind of foundations do you have in mind?" "Well, you know, good concrete." I said, "I don't want to do that. I want to do pylons." Because I lived in Santa Barbara when I was younger and I was a realtor. And what I discovered is when you would have a major earthquake, houses on pylons might move over and, you know, the pylons might move and that kind of stuff. But they usually didn't fall down. They moved with the earth. And I wanted pylons that would allow the houses to move as the earth moved. So I found a way of coming up with a pylon that you drill into the ground and you build down the bedrock and you do all this kind of stuff. And the guy said, "Oh, well, that's going to be twice as much money." I said, "Okay." He said, "Well, you don't want to do that." I said, "Yeah, I do." He says, "No, you don't. It's too much money." And then we had this company that came in and they were supposedly the experts on building a resort. And they said, "Well, you just, you know, you're trying to use 125 acres to make this resort. It's like, you should do 2 acres of that to make one very fine hotel on for 2 acres and then sell the rest." I said, "I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do that." And it's like the other thing I said, "And there will be no trees cut down in the making of this place."
Wow.
Because I'd seen how they, you know, they go in and they strip the earth. They strip away meters of topsoil, and then they put in things, and then they try to grow things. And it's like, you know, yes, it's jungle, and it does grow well, but it's not the same. And so I would not allow any trees to be cut. And we had trees on there that had been used to create fences. You know, they put them in the earth and then they cut a tree down and they stick it in the earth and they put barbed wire on it, and that's how they made fences. Well, those trees, when we took the barbed wire off of them and left them alone, grew to 40 feet. They had been 4 feet tall when we bought the place. 2 years later, they're 40 feet tall. I went, holy shit, this is amazing. But they have, you know, they have bromeliads and they have orchids and stuff growing in them. And then the birds all sing. And we have, on our property, we have three of the species of toucans that live in Costa Rica. There are only two of the places that the guides know of where they have five, you know, three or more. Five is the biggest number, but three is very unusual for there to be three sets of toucans. And we're next door to a place that helps, you know, the animals, that is breeding macaws, because they're all on the endangered species list now, because we took so many of them out of the jungle thinking they would just be prevalent anyway. And people bought them and kept them in their houses and killed them, essentially. And they, you know, it's just amazing. And so we have green macaws, blue macaws, and now a yellow macaw showed up. So we're going to have more macaws growing. And the previous owners planted pecan trees, and pecans are what the macaws like to eat. But it's not when you grow nuts in Costa Rica, they're not good because they need more cold than that to be a good nut. They're mealy and not that good, but the macaws don't care. They like the taste. So no trees were cut. Nothing was cut. We had a guy who came to us because he was saving wild animals that were being found in the city. And he came and asked him if we could turn them loose on our property. We said, sure. And we have 125 acres on one side. That's where the resort is. And then we have another 600 acres on the other side that is just wild space. And so we said, sure, turn them loose over there. So he came and turned them loose, but he always turned them loose on our side of the property because he couldn't get over there easy. And, you know, when you're carrying a, you know, 500-pound ocelot, chances are you're not going to be carrying it across the bridge for very much. You don't want to do that. So he turned these things loose, and tapirs and all kinds of stuff. And we find it amusing because one tapir decided to live on the 125 acres. So she burrowed under one of the casitas with its pylons. She burrowed under that, and that's where she lives. And she goes out at night to look around. And we have armadillos, and we have every kind of animal under the sun, and they all live there. You know, and it's like, and they're very funny, and sloths, and the sloths will stand up and go, you know, but they actually are too gentle and too slow to do anything to you. So it's very interesting. So we have all these animals that live on the property, and they let the people see them, which I think is amazing. But we don't impinge our point of view on them, and we don't require them to leave. We require people to treat them as wild animals. And we state that, you know, it's like, there are wild animals here. Please do not try to pet them because you might get hurt.
Yeah. And
I said, yeah, wild animals. They're not tame. This is not a zoo, and this is not a petting zoo. Don't think you can pet this ocelot because it'll claw you, you know. And so we have all these animals that are there, and they will actually come across the bridge from the bigger property to see us periodically and to check on our, you know, our level of completion. I think it's just amusing as hell. The animals like us, we like them, and everything goes well. And so we have a different place. We also have a guy who came from England, lives in England, and he comes and redoes he sets up our air conditioning and our hot water, so that we are using about $2 a day for each casita to have hot water and air conditioning and lights.
Wow. Wow.
So that's very unusual, because in Costa Rica, what they called ecological was they gave you one 25 watt light bulb to shine in your room. And that's what they call being ecological. That's fine, but I'm too old to read by a 25 watt light. I need more than that.
Well, I tell you, Gary, Costa Rica is, if not my favorite spot in the world, it's one of mine. Without that, the top three. I took my family. We went there several years ago, and it still resonates, the beauty. And we chose not to do the tourist stuff. We stayed in the kind of rainforest, that type of experience. Yeah. But I mean, what you're creating, I remember Simone explaining to me what you're creating is just beautiful. It's fantastic. And in Costa Rica, I mean, we were just, it was almost like a wildlife hike, many, many days for us, across, multiple types of terrain. But they are so proud of their environment and their ecosystem and the creatures, whether it's the tiny little ants, the army ants, I remember that, all the way to
aren't
the
they wonderful? Whales.
It's just beautiful, Gary. More power to you, man. That's fantastic.
Okay, good. So I'm going to make an offer to you.
Yeah.
I will give you 3 days, free days, at our resort if you go there again.
Oh, thank you so much. That's very gracious of you, Gary. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
You know, it's like you'll love it. And our place is so unique. I mean, we had some teenagers that came this last week and stayed there two nights. And they said, we don't want to go home. And we're going to bring our families back and stay here for longer in the future.
Lovely. Lovely. Yeah. That's beautiful, Gary. I may take you up on that, Gary. I tell you, because that's a beautiful
place.
Please
do.
Thank you. All right. As we wrap up our conversation, Gary, is there a key message or takeaway from the gift of allowance that you would like to leave our listeners with?
Yeah. It's like allowance is interesting point of view, not doormat. Don't be a doormat ever, but be interesting point of view. You don't have to fight to have your point of view. You can have your point of view, whether anybody agrees with you or not.
Wow. Powerful. Beautifully said, Gary. Gary, this has been tremendous. Thank you. I love the straight talk. I love your humor. I had a lot of fun. I learned a lot from
Thanks.
You as well.
I'm glad. It was fun.
It's
you
clear.
The guys are right. You're wonderful. So I'm glad I agreed to do this.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, you're very gracious, and the team has been as well. But look, for all the wonderful work you've done globally over the past three decades or so, I'm grateful for that. I know many, many people. I follow Access Consciousness and, the global events around the world. You're changing lives for the better, and you're elevating humanity in your way. What a wonderful legacy, Gary. Appreciate it.
Thank you, my friend. You take care.
Love you very much, man. Take
care. Love you too.
All the very best, Gary. Take care of yourself now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I hope that you found today's session valuable. If so, please follow me on Instagram @outram.richard and post your comments. Thank you again. Until the next podcast.